We take a look at global child mortality. According to the most recent data, nearly 7 million young children die annually, and most of these deaths are from preventable causes.
Our next guest has been covering child mortality around the world. He notes that things have been getting better in the last few decades, but there's still a lot of work to be done.
We're joined now by Dr. Harman Boberai. He's a Kaiser Health Reporting Fellow at Global Post. We've got a link to their report, Step by Step, The Path to Ending Child Mortality, on the Central Time Facebook page. Dr. Boberai, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Happy to talk.
Well, 7 million children lost sounds like a pretty big number, and it certainly is. But the problem has been getting better. Child mortality rates have been dropping since 1990. What accounts for the improvement, and where is it now?
Well, there has been a significant improvement, definitely. The rates have come down from 12 million children we used to lose in 1990 to around 7 million now. The improvement is mostly because of general socioeconomic improvement in the conditions of the poorest people, mostly in South Asia and sub-Saharan Africa, where most of these deaths are concentrated. But at the same time, the progress is not on track to achieve the reduction in two-thirds, which was one of the Millennium Development Goals by 2015, one of the United Nations goals. So although there has been a significant progress, there are still major problems that need to be accounted for.
Let's talk about the reasons that countries experience child mortality. What are they?
Well, there are many reasons, and most of them, in fact, are preventable causes, like pneumonia and diarrhea. About half of the child deaths occur in the first month of birth itself, and those are related to complications related to preterm birth or to delivery, because believe it or not, more than half of the deliveries in some regions of the world occur at home without trained health professionals assisting them. That puts the mother and the child at great risk. And also the problems of malaria and diarrhea, which are infectious causes, which are relatively unheard of in the Western world, lead to a major chunk of child deaths. Pneumonia and diarrhea account for about 5,000 child deaths every single day around the world.
Now, India represents about one-fifth of these deaths annually. Why is the problem particularly bad in that country?
Well, it's multifactorial. One is the size of the population, being 1.2 billion people and 127 million children under the age of five in the country. The sheer scale of the problem is very large. The other is India has a problem with chronic malnutrition of its, especially in the peripheral non-urban areas, which leads to lower resistance for the mothers and for the newborns, and of course that leads to a higher rate of child mortality. And of course the basic problem of healthcare facilities not reaching the most peripheral areas of the country leads to a higher level of child mortality in the country.
Now let's talk about some of the success stories, countries that have been successful at reducing the child mortality rate. What are they and what have they been able to do?
There are many examples. For example, India's neighbor, Bangladesh, which has been able to reduce child mortality much more than India. And the reasons for that mostly are community-based efforts, along with technical know-how and guidance from international organizations like the United Nations and other non-governmental organizations. It's the government's effort and the political will which actually translates into the ground movements which lead to this decrease. For example, even in India now, there's a concept of community health workers in every village who is going to be a woman from that village educating the people on safe delivery practices and immunizations and how to maintain adequate nutrition for the children. So it boils down to the last mile connection between the healthcare facilities and the people. And the more community interventions and the more community health workers there are, the more the reduction we see in child mortality.
Now, we should also talk about another successful country, Niger, who is one of the world's poorest countries, but they've been able to reduce their child mortality rate by over two-thirds over the last couple of decades. What is it they're getting right?
Well, like I said, one of the major determinant factors is the political will. Once there is political will in a country like that, the dispersal of health information, of education, and maternal empowerment is much higher than in other countries. Why I speak of maternal empowerment specifically is that in most countries and in most parts of countries where we see a reduced child mortality, it is because women are empowered more to take decisions about the health of their family, about economic decisions within their families. And because of that, they're more empowered to take care of their own health and the health of their children. They can take care of the sicknesses. They can prevent the sicknesses by optimal practices in nutrition and breastfeeding and sanitation and hygiene. And they can also, with the help of community health workers, avail of the health facilities, which the government, to their credit, are making available at the more peripheral areas.
Can we talk a little more about maternal empowerment? Do you have any stories about what that actually looks like within a family?
I actually do. When I was in India this summer reporting on child mortality from the central state of Madhya Pradesh, I have a good and a bad story. One of the, I'll start with the bad one first. The mother had to deliver on her own without any help in her village house because A, because there was no one to help her, and B, there was no village hospital within an hour of her in any direction. Mm. As a result of that, she delivered on her own. Thankfully, there were no complications, but an untrained birth attendant who came later cut the umbilical cord with an unsterile blade, because of which the baby ended up developing neonatal tetanus, and a few days later, the baby passed away. So the mother was not empowered to make any decisions or economically empowered to actually seek out the facilities which might have been available at some distance. On the other hand, in the same district, the level of education in some people being higher, the mothers were able to access the community health worker or use modern technology, mobile phones, which are, we take it for granted in the Western world. But in the same time, in countries like India, there are lots of new advances which mothers can use to call free services, free health services, which the government is making available. And the education and the empowerment of that particular woman was the reason that she was able to access those facilities and reach an institution where she could deliver safely.
Mm. So two very different outcomes there. Oh, about a year ago, the U.S. government kicked off a new initiative called A Promise Renewed to try and end preventable child deaths for good. And, you know, the fact that they had to renew this promise implies that it had slipped off the radar. Why does that happen, and what is being done to change that outcome?
Well, sometimes what happens is that such problems, when we look at a number like 7 million, it does not hit you because it is, in many cases, a chronic problem. One of the more one of the factors is the chronic undernutrition, which makes these children more vulnerable to common infections. It does not strike you like a natural disaster would strike you. It does not capture the attention of the world's media and of its people. So, being a chronic problem, sometimes governments and policymakers might keep it on the back burner. But at the same time, what we have realized, because 2015. Which is the deadline for the Millennium Development Goals is approaching, is that our progress has not been enough. For example, at this rate, to reduce child mortality by two-thirds, which was to be achieved in 2015, we would only be able to do it by 2028, which means a loss of an extra 35 million children under the age of five. Mm. That's a staggering number. That means we have to accelerate the progress, and that is why countries and non-governmental organizations and organizations like the UN are now renewing the promise and stepping up the efforts.
Now, you've been talking about some of the solutions, vaccines, maternal empowerment, access to health care, education. Going forward, what do you want the U.S. and aid organizations to know about what is necessary to get the job done and meet those goals?
Well, one of the major factors which you have to take into account is the country's intervention itself. You have to supplement the efforts of the countries rather than, dumping aid money into some countries that are not able to utilize that aid money in a way that it reaches the more peripheral areas. Might be a noble thought, but it does not work. What does work is providing the countries with technical know-how and with programs and interventions that are low cost, where you can build capacity at the most peripheral levels by projects such as the community health worker projects. It has to be about making interventions work, making the governments and the non-governmental organizations know about what specific actions they can take other than just the funding.
Dr. Boparai, thank you so much for joining us today.
Very happy to talk.
We've been speaking with Dr. Harman Boparai. He's a Kaiser Health Reporting Fellow at Global Post. And we've got a link to their report, Step by Step, The Path to Ending Childhood Mortality, on the Central Time Facebook page.